for the fans, by the fans. This is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back solo with another hour or so of Non-League's biggest and most interesting stories. Lots of nail-biting and tissue-twirling ahead this weekend as the normal season draws to a close across much of the pyramid. My guests this week include a manager whose 20-match winning run could see him secure the title this weekend for a club that is deeply ingrained in his family. There's also the man who came on for his side 41 years since he made his first team debut for the club, and a league chairman looking forward to the latest changes announced to the football pyramid this week. Non-league football just keeps giving, so let's get things underway. So to our first guest of the week, and he's riding high. 19 wins on the trot saw them second in the North West Counties Premier League table at Step 5 over Easter before they took on ground sharers City and Liverpool. A win for Boodle puts them now level on points but ahead on goal difference going into the final game of the season. Perfectly poised then, a manager at Boodle FC, Joe Doran.
Hi there, you're okay?
Yeah, good. So is it? Would you have taken this at the start of the season?
Most definitely, yeah. I think I'd have probably taken it in the middle of October, if you're asking me. We didn't get off to the greatest of starts. Obviously, I came back about the 10th of October, and then within 2 or 3 weeks, we'd lost a couple and exited both cups. So I thought, you know, it's time to roll my sleeves up and get stuck in and sort of and salvage what was left of the season. I think I've done a good job of that so far.
Salvaging the, you know, it's stretching it somewhat. I mean, we all want to talk about that run of 20 wins now. I mean, what was the turning point? Was it just you coming in and changing the ethos of the players that you had, or you brought in a whole new change of squad?
No, I think to be honest, it was just a change of, and it wasn't overnight, but it was a change of attitude. I think. We'd had a lot of players that had been at the club for a number of years, and when it did come back, you know, it was always the approach to sort of get us to the end of the season and sort of take stock. Then we had a couple of good results within the first two or three, and then we got a mauling by Prescott Cables in the Liverpool Senior Cup, which was sort of a wake up call to everyone to say that, you know, where we want to be, we're miles away from it. And then the game after, I think we went to Silsden away with like 13 or 14 men because. Basically, you know, people had decided that they had more important things in their life and they couldn't make a far trip on a Saturday afternoon. So we went to Silsden with the Bear 14. We had our sub goalkeeper named as an outfield sub and a 17-year-old lad on the bench from the 18s, and we won 7-0. And the lad came on from the youth team and scored the seventh goal. So I think on the bus on the way back, I think there was just a bit more of an optimistic feel about the place, and I knew then that, you know, if I could bring a few more people in, then I would do.
I mean, I often talk about, you know, non-league should be the focus of a Hollywood movie at some point, and you know, you're talking there about that change, you know, the goalkeeper on a bench, a young 17-year-old, and when I was preparing some notes for this, it appeared to be like one of these movie scripts. You beat your ground sharers last week to go top. You're on this long run. Now on Saturday, as I say, Dave Anderson is normally my co-host of the show. He's taken his Chertsey Town side to Wembley. They face Craig Valley Paper Mills in the final. But to get there, they've beaten Northwich Victoria. Now they're the side that you've got to beat on Saturday, and your rival City of Liverpool, they've got to try and beat Earlham, who Dave Anderson's Chertsey Town side beat before they played Northwich Victoria. I mean, it's almost like Hollywood's waiting for this story. Is there a final twist to the plot?
I'd like to think that the final twist is just confirming our league win. But as you've just said, you know, with all the twists and turns and the interlinks between all the connections, you know, with the Chertsey link there as well. I mean, we beat Northwich Victoria earlier on the 15th of December in our run, and we were 3-0 up after 15 minutes, and in the last minute, our goalkeeper's made a world-class save into the top corner of a header, which has basically won us the game. And, you know, and going back further than that, 10 years ago, when I won the league as a player in the First Division of North West Counties, our main rivals at the time were Paddington we've won the league before. And Steve Wilkes was the manager of Paddington, and obviously Steve Wilkes is the manager of Norfolk Victoria. So, there's lots of. I mean, it could be a Hollywood.
Well, I think so, one thing we have learned is that Steve Wilkes apparently likes blue WKD. So you know, if
he does, maybe
get a crate in whatever the result. Now, I mean, you say you've already mentioned you came back to the club as manager, and you were there as a black. I mean, how special would it be for you to get Bootle FC promoted?
It'd be absolutely everything. I'm trying to not think about the occasion or what it means to the club, because essentially it's going to come down to 90 minutes. So you know, I've been in this situation before a couple of seasons ago where with three games to go, it was us and Everton Colliery that were fighting for the league, but it was much more backwards and forwards then. Like, they were top, we were top, and you know, they managed to do it with two games to go. I think we've only been in a position once before, back in 2013, I think it was, where we went to the final day. But that was, I think, to be honest, you know, we weren't in a situation where we could win it. I think there was something like a 14-goal swing needed on goal difference if we won. So to make the step up into the Evo stick would be absolutely massive for the club. Massive for myself, really. You know, being involved with the club for so long, and obviously knowing all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes, not just the football pitch. I think, you know, it really be a milestone in terms of achievements. But I'm trying to not think too much about it, because obviously we've got this small matter of an FA Vars semi-finalist and one of the biggest clubs in non-league standing in our way.
In your hands, at least, I suppose that's an advantage. Now,
it is. Yeah.
It certainly sounds to be a great time to be involved at the club, or be at the club. A whopping, was it over 1,300 at the game the other day? I mean,
That's right, 1,374.
Well, that's it. I mean, at Step 5, that's an amazing attendance, and it really shows where the club's heading.
Yeah, I think the last few years, you know, there's been a surge in support for a lot of the non-league clubs in Liverpool. You know, for many years, you know, the focus in Liverpool had mainly been on National FA Sunday Cup, or you know, one or two non-league clubs. Obviously, Breen have done really, really well over a number of years. You know, Skem, Prescott, but obviously the emergence of the likes of City, Liverpool, AFC Liverpool, Liverpool and Remeker, who are now in our league, that's given us the rivals and. You know, the people that we can test ourselves against, that really we crave for. For a number of years, it was just ourselves and Formby in the North West Counties, you know, in recent times. And as obviously the decline of Formby, you know, it's difficult to get people motivated in Liverpool when you say, oh, we're going to be, and no disrespect to these places, but a lot of people in Liverpool haven't heard of the likes of Daisy Hill or Silsden. So when you're saying, oh, we're going to be playing City Liverpool or Remeker, Lower Breck, you know, people on the local non-league scene, people understand that these are good sides and they'll be good games. So I think, you know, that's exactly what you're seeing. Everything that's riding on the game, the run that we've been on, obviously the support that City Liverpool get, just made for a great day, obviously a massive crowd.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, some of those names that have had, you know, great Vars runs or FA Cup runs, and it does seem that the whole area is buzzing regarding football at non-league, as you suggest. Does that make it more difficult to then attract players in?
It can be. I mean, the players, in terms of players, it's the catchment area is probably second to none. To be honest, it's probably only London or maybe the North East that you know have the amount of players that are available to Step 5 and 6, I would say. But I think the difficulty that we do have is that obviously being on the doorstep of Liverpool and Everton, you know, if they're playing at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, it can make a big difference to who comes through to our games. But I think, you know, the last few years, you know, with everything that's gone on, with the rise of all these clubs, I think that's started to change and people have started to become a bit more, even though Liverpool are going for the league, people have become disillusioned with, you know, the brand, the Premiership and you know, stuff like that. So I think getting back to the raw grassroots side of it or like the non-league side of it is perfect for young families or people that can't afford to go to Anfield or Goodison every week.
Yeah, and that was one thing I was going to mention. Certainly, I mean, yours is what you'd term a family club, isn't it? You know, it's there, definitely. Run by family, yeah. Attracting families.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, obviously, my granddad's president of the club. You know, he started playing in 1954 as when they were Langton as a dockside. He's been in every role, you know, player, secretary, manager, chairman, president. He's done it all, groundsman. He's done everything. I mean, to be honest, him and me two uncles sort of, and my uncle-in-law sort of kept the club going when we basically our ground was sold us by Sefton Council, and we were promised a new ground with a 100-year lease. 8 years or 6 or 7 years later, we were given this new ground, but obviously we had to get back into the North West Counties. So there were some dark days, and a lot of people would have walked away and probably turned their back on the club at that point, because 6 or 7 years when you're basically getting no income at all playing on park pitches, it's difficult to keep motivation. But they did do that, and now obviously we're thriving with our biggest ever attendances and our highest ever league position as well a couple of years ago.
Yeah, so your granddad's probably, I mean, he's already very proud of you, of what you achieved this season already, I'm sure. Will he have a quiet word in your ear before the game on Saturday?
I don't think it'll be really quiet. I mean, he's been shouting at me since I was about six, you know, to make sure that I get stuck in or stop watching the buses as the ball goes past me, stuff things like that. So, you know, he's always got a word for me, but they're never quiet.
And the club is more about just the first team, though, isn't it? You've got the 3G pitches and a whole community going on there.
Yes. So we got 2 3G pitches which we hire out to the local community. They get used a lot. You know, we offer them at affordable prices, close to like about 40% cheaper than the local rivals, and they're just of equal standard. You know, these big commercial companies that like to, you know, like to goals and play football, that do it. And then we've got a function room that gets used, you know, between 50 and 60 times a year. It's like christenings, 21st, family parties, things like that. So, you know, and we hire that out of the local community. We've also just introduced a Roman activity theme park behind one of our goals, which is the first of its kind in the Northwest.
Wow.
So we're working in partnership with a guy who solely deals in hen and stag do parties. You know, we've got a pigeon club. We've got everything, really. We wanted to come away from the model that we had under our old club, where basically all you could do there was go to the bar or watch the football. So, you know, we know that a club of our size, we need an income stream. So we made sure that when we designed the layout of our new ground, we had the space and the facilities to enable us to generate more income, to give, you know, the town and the people of Bootle a club that they can be proud of.
And I'm sure they're very proud of it as well. And hopefully, fingers crossed, things go well for you at the weekend, and there'll be even more pride as Bootle celebrate a title win. Are you going to change the way that you set out your day on Saturday, or is it just going to be standard and try and get the best out of the boys?
Yeah, everything's going to be kept exactly the same. You know, it could have been easy to be. You know, we had a couple of knocks on Monday. You know, two games in quick succession. It could have been easy to just like to call training off and say, let's wrap everyone up in cotton wool before Saturday, but I don't think that would be the right approach. I think we just got to treat it as any other game, just like the previous 20 that we've gone into. We've got to go into it confident. We've got 5 clean sheets on the bounce now as well, so we just go into it with every confidence. But we do know it's a stay. You know, it's a stay and test. Norfolk are a good side. Obviously, FA Vars semi finalists. You know, but we've already beat them away, so we're hopeful that we can get the results.
Well, Joe, it's been fantastic talking to you. It's a fantastic story, both your involvement at the club and also this current run that you're on, which will hopefully continue. We wish you well at the weekend and look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Cheers. Thank you.
Now, we tend not to speak to two clubs from the same division in one show, but this one was too good to be. So our next club also comes from the North West Counties. Now, how many times have you cried out for an old head to fill in or to steady the ship on the field at your club? On Easter Monday, our next guest came on off the bench some 41 years since he made his debut for Squiresgate. Tell us more. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, John Maguire.
Hello, welcome, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's good to have you on. Now, let's get this one out of the way. You're going to be celebrating your birthday this week, and quite a momentous one as well.
That's right, yeah. I'll be hitting the big 6-0 tomorrow, actually. Tonight we've got a sportsman's dinner at Squire's Gate tonight, so I'll be celebrating it then, I dare say.
Oh, and it was what a week to celebrate as well. I mean, happy birthday from us all. But I mean, how come you were registered to play and then came on Easter Monday at the ripe old age of 59?
Well, actually, I'd registered myself a bit earlier on in the season, actually, Tim. Around Christmas time, I could see then that on Friday night I was having a chat with the manager Andy Clarkson, and we had quite a few lads unavailable. And one or two had the fitness tests on the Saturday morning. One or two phoned in saying they were a bit ill. And so the alarm bells were ringing then. So I thought, I better just make sure we've got a bit of cover on here, just for numbers-wise. So I registered myself, you know, around mid-December time, just in case anything happened. And on that day, fortunately, I didn't need to come on, I'm pleased to say. I was okay at Earlham Town, that was, in December. So that's why I was registered. And then on Easter Monday, again, we had one or two late cry-offs that weren't anticipated. So again, I named myself on the bench as third sub, so I thought, I won't need to come on. But we had a couple of injuries, you know, round about the hour mark, 70 minutes. And then I was hoping nothing would happen. Then James Boydy, one of our forwards, got injured towards the end. And the manager said, how are you fixed? So I said, yeah, no problem. So I had a quick stretch and I came on for in the 87th minute. And so I probably played 5 or 6 minutes altogether.
And of course, you know, you thought there might be a problem, so you filled in the form, because you're not just the ever dependable player that you've proven you are this week, but you're also one of non-league's unsung heroes, the ever dependable club secretary.
That's right, yeah, club secretary, probably a bit more of a general dog's body, maybe. you know, pumping up the balls, getting the water bottle sorted out, helping mark the pitch out before a game. There's four or five of us do that on a Saturday morning. So always there. I've been there, you know, quite a number of years now, you know, and hopefully let's keep it going for quite a few more years yet with a bit of luck.
Yeah, and how long have you been filling forms in?
Oh, well, I became secretary when I was playing. I was in my late 20s, probably, it'd be, you know, round about, you know, 70, probably, sorry, no, about 88, 89, something like that. Our chairman at the time, Wilf Carr, when we were in the West Lancashire League, he said, well, I'll be secretary. So I took that when I was still playing, and then when we went into the North West Counties in the early 90s, I was secretary then, and for a couple of seasons I've been secretary ever since.
And filling in the bench as well, ever since as well, by the sounds of things.
Well, yeah, just like, only as and when required. I mean, I finished playing regularly in 1996 when I was 37, you know, obviously, like, you know, your legs go, time catches up with you, so I'd not played, but I've played a handful of times since then, just when, say, we had a change of manager and players, as they do these days, unfortunately, they leave. So back in say 2004, I remember playing the full game away at Abbey Hay. I came on at Stalybridge Celtic in around about 2004 as well. So I made the very occasional appearance, but I really thought that I would not be required to play again, like, you know. But the lads were great about it when before the game. Adam Sutton lent me a pair of shin pads. Gary Pell lent me a spare pair of boots. So I was all good to go.
It's as well as ever dependable. You obviously the perfect size to fit into everybody's gear as well, which is, yeah, that's what the ultimate utility player has to be able to fill in there. Now, you were a left back in your prime,
right.
I believe, and thankfully you weren't left back in the change rooms, as the old joke goes, this time around. But I think you were pushed up front. Have you played up front before?
No, never played up front before. Our manager put me up front where I could do less damage. Obviously, I couldn't afford to go at the back. I think somebody may be able to go around me a little bit too easy these days. So I just did as least damage as I could. We try and occupy one of their defenders, maybe. But I must say, we played Charnock Richard, and their manager and their players were great about it. You know, there was no rash challenges, I'm pleased to say. I just was a bit of a nuisance figure up front for the last few minutes. No damage caused, I'm pleased to say.
No damage caused, but I mean, what about your impact? Are you on the are you in the frame for Saturday?
Well, I'd be very disappointed if I don't start Saturday after my little cameo on Monday. I'm waiting to hear from the manager to confirm whether I'll be in the starting 11 or not. We'll have to wait and see about that one.
Yeah, well, you sound like you enjoyed it, so I guess the limbs aren't too achy.
No, I was fine, I'm pleased to say. I try and keep myself in relatively decent shape. Like, you know, I've got a bit of a dodgy leg. I've had a couple of ops on that, you know, when I finished playing. But hopefully, you know, I'm still relatively okay. So, yeah, I was okay the following day. No problem at all. No real reaction. So I'm back ready to go again on Saturday.
And I mentioned you made your debut 41 years ago, but I think you've been involved at the club even longer than that.
Yeah, I was involved in a local team in Blackpool, South Shore Athletic, we were called, and then we stopped playing when we were like under 16. So it was back in 1975 I joined Squires Gate, and our president now, Brian Addison, who was first team manager at the time, he told me this morning that I made my debut for reserves in, I think it was October. I came on a sub in October 1975 for the reserves. I made my first start in December 75, but I didn't make my debut for the first team until April 78, towards the end of that season, when Brian was himself the manager. Taddeo, he was a manager then. So, I still remember this day when he said to me, in fact, on the Monday night, me and Brian, we'd both played for our reserves. And he said, "Are you okay? How you feel?" I said, "I'm fine, Taddy, no problem." He said, "Well, you're playing for the first team tomorrow night." So that was back in the days when it was no big deal to play two games in 2 days.
Well, and so, you know, but you've proven that you had the stamina as well to keep going all these years on. Now, I mean, you've mentioned that there's a sportsman's dinner tonight at the club. And
yep.
the club really is thriving as a community, not just on the field, but also off it as well.
That's right. That's right. Well, we've got a new chairman, Tony Joe. He came on board a couple of years ago, and he's a bit of a local celebrity, and he's really raised our profile massively. He's arranged another sports dinner tonight. Norman Hunter, the ex-Leeds United England defender, he's our guest speaker, with Johnny Kastner, comedian. Tony himself will be the compere. So that should be a really good night tonight that we're looking forward to.
Yeah, and there's lots going on with the youth and everything like that as
yep.
well. And
yep.
There's no promotion this season for you guys, but we'll speak later in the show about the additional Step 4 division coming in under yep. the wing in the Northern Premier League. And that yep. would mean more clubs from Step 5 gaining promotion. How's the club fixed for maybe making that step up and competing at that next level?
Okay, it's something that we start to speak about now. Tony, our chairman, is very ambitious and he's looking for us to push forward. Over the past few years, really, we've been struggling, really, to keep our state in the Premier League. We're a relatively small club, but we've been punching above our weight for quite a number of years now. But now Tony's coming, he's attracted more sponsorship for us, so we are really looking to progress. We may have quite a bit to work do on the ground, possibly. I'm not too sure exactly what grading requirements we'd need to be able to move up to Step 4, but it's something that, you know, we have an open mind about, and we're aware of the increased number of promotion places next year. There are obviously quite a few clubs in our league who also will have their eye on that, so I'm sure next year will be a very competitive division.
Yeah, well, it's already a competitive division.
Oh, unbelievable.
This year, you look at the names there. We've spoken of Bootle and their challenge with the City of Liverpool. They're at the top. It's a good time to be involved in the football up there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a really exciting. I mean, City of Liverpool, they had it won, really. It was in the bag. We were the last team to beat Bootle, I believe, back in December. I was going to chat with Joe Doran, their manager, on Saturday. And it was, again, it was a must-win for them. And they beat us 1-0, a very close game, I must say, but they just managed to pick us 1-0. And then on Easter Monday, they had to play City Liverpool, which was, to all intents and purposes, a bit of a championship decider, really. And Bootle won that one 1-0. And they have a better goal difference, and they level on points now. So depending on how things go next Saturday, it's going to be very... It's obviously gone right to the very wire in our league, but it's been a really exciting finish. I think Bootle have won about 20 on the bounce now, yep. which is a remarkable run. And so, you know, and every credit to them if they do, in fact, you know, get promoted.
Well, John, you've just proven you are Mr. Non-League, aren't you? I mean, you know all the stats, you know everything about it, you've got a history, and you're still playing now. You can sense that you love the game.
Yeah, well, I was having a chat again, like I said, on Saturday morning, we all got to, you know, there's about five or six of us go to the ground, work it all, you know, work on the pitch, getting everything ready. And we were saying, like, you know, why do we do it? You know, why do we? Because, you know, our wives and partners, they think we're a bit mad, really. But at the end of the day, I think we have so much pleasure ourselves from playing that we want to give something back. And all you can do, really, is keep your club glowing. And we've got people like Brian Anderson, I was saying before, has been at the club. you know, best part of 60 years. People like Steve Bellamy, Mick Farah, they've been, well, Steve's been there longer than me, so he's been there probably best part of 50 years now. So we have a really long-standing committee at Squiresgate. And so we really need to, you know, keep the club going, keep pushing it forward. And with the impetus that, that Tony Joe's given us, you know, that's what we want to do, really. So we want to keep pushing forward, keep progressing and see where it takes us.
And that's fantastic. We spoke with the Street last week and they were suggesting that it may be a difficulty for non-league clubs in the coming years. It's going to be an ageing demographic. You've got lots of your guys there. You're all very sprightly and that sort of thing. But we need some youngsters coming through as well. I mean, if you were to look back when you were a 16-year-old, first getting involved there, but yeah, would you have got involved in the football club? I mean, how can non-league football clubs get younger minds involved behind the scenes?
Yeah, that's a very difficult question that I really think. It's something that if you look at, say, at half-time, for instance, if you look at the age of the opposing committees, the chairman, the secretary, the treasurer, the committee men, they're nearly all like quite, you know, guys in the 60s, 70s, etc. So it's a bit of a concern about the young guys coming through. I think one of the problems is when, you know, I'm probably one of the last of a certain era, but, you know, I joined the clubs, you know, the local club, Squiresgate, from a local team in Blackpool, stayed with them, played for them for quite a number of years. And nowadays you get a lad, if he gets left out of a team, he'll go to another club and play for somebody else. And so consequently, when they finish playing, there is not really, they've not really got attached with any particular club. So when they finish playing often, they just don't bother doing anything and probably go and sit in a bookmakers or a pub on a Saturday afternoon, which is a real shame. But what we're looking to do is from our youth setup, I mean, the ideal situation for me would be young lads come through the Squiresgate youth system. Hopefully someone will be good enough to stay in our first team, play for our first team. And if you progress onwards, brilliant, well done, son. But if they're good to play at whatever level we're playing at, that'll be great, and hopefully they can keep the Squiresgate tradition going, and that's what that ideally is what I'd like to see. In reality, it's not always that simple.
Well, I hope as much as it's been great to hear that you managed to make it onto the field, John, fantastic to see the young blood coming through at Squiresgate and the clubs all around. But it's been fantastic talking to you. I better let you get off and go and get Brilliant. Some of those early birthday drinks in, but not too many. I'm looking forward to seeing you on the team sheet on Saturday.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a pleasure, Tim. Thank you.
So, whilst many look forward to this weekend and how it affects where they'll play next season, the powers that be are already looking further ahead than that. This week saw confirmation of the new Step 4 division to be introduced from season 2020-2021. The 8th division will be placed under the guardianship of the Northern Premier League, and I'm pleased to say that old friend of the show and chairman at the Northern Premier League, Mark Harris, joins us on the line to tell us more. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thank you, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's good to have you on, and, you know, it was always perhaps a sensible choice, but by no means guaranteed that this new division would be placed under the Northern Premier League. I know there would have been a lot of work that went into your bid to the FA.
Yeah, that's very much the case. There was a full tender process, so we had to submit a written document, and in common with the other leagues competing for this, we were then all invited down to Wembley to present our proposition. So yeah, a lot of work goes into it, but certainly it's correct that that a process of that nature, a really important decision, is completely open and transparent.
Yeah, and it does give you parity with the Southern League and the Isthmian League. But yeah, what is great to see in recent years, and in really much due to your own stewardship, that the Step 3 and Step 4 leagues, they've retained their own identities and independence, but you work very hard as a united force where needed now, and that's been a big benefit for clubs across the country and for fans too.
Well, that's a very deliberate thing, and perhaps put a bit more explanation behind that. These days, as we all know, clubs don't get promoted to a division, they get promoted to a step, and movements for sort of clubs between different divisions, depending on where the geographical boundaries are set, are part and parcel of non-league football. As leagues, we all believe it's really important, particularly at steps 3 and 4, that there's as much consistency in the way that each individual league administers itself, so that you look to have common approaches on commercial activity, common approaches on ground grading. So wherever possible, ourselves, the Southern and the Isthmian, with fantastic support from the National League, I must say, have really set ourselves out to act in cooperation to achieve the sort of consistency for the benefit of the club.
Yeah, and you already have the First Division East and the First Division West at step four. Any insights into what this new division will be called?
Probably a bit too early to say, to be honest, Tim. The reality is that you really don't know where your boundaries are going to fall and where your boundaries should be placed until you know which clubs are coming into the competition. I mean, a year or so ago, we took a decision to ask our clubs their views on whether they felt our step four division should be north, south, east, west. And they took the decision that it should be east, west. Interestingly enough, clubs in the east do more travelling, quite substantially more actually, than clubs in the west. But when you talk to our clubs in the east division, that A1 is a bit easier to get up and down, which I know sounds a little bit sort of train spotterish, but it is all about not just the actual physical miles they do and the cost of that, but the time involved. So what we'll do, we'll see exactly how the land is going to lie over the clubs that will be coming into this new division, and we'll then look to set the boundaries as fairly and equitably as possible so that clubs are not being disadvantaged, and similarly, no clubs having an unfair advantage by having minimal travel compared to others.
Yeah, and obviously an extra step four division is going to require some more movement, some clubs sideways, promotion from step five. And I know many feared a dilution of standards with more clubs up from step five, but you've got to be pleased with the way things have worked out this season. Clubs like Morpeth Town, proving that they're worthy of playing at step four.
Yeah, I think there's two sides to that. Certainly in terms of the playing performance, that's absolutely the case, and Morpeth have been worthy champions of our Eastern Division. But it's not just about that. And you referenced there the dilution of standards, whether that be in terms of ground facilities, ground grading, hospitality, whatever it may well be. What we try to do as a league is to make it very clear to our clubs what the expectation is. And wherever possible, we start that with support from our feeder leagues before they even come into the competition. So looking to the year, slightly more than a year ahead, one of our jobs will be to see whether our feeder leagues, the Northern League, the Northwest Counties and the Northern Counties East, wish us to sit down with their clubs and just explain a little bit about what life is like at the higher level and the sort of things they need to do to plan. A major change this year has been the reintroduction for next year of the E grade. Now, what does that mean? Previously, you could be a club at step five, so Northwest County's top division, similarly across the piece. To be a member of that league, you had to have an F grade, and in the old days, you had to have an E to be promoted. And you then had another year when you went up to the step four to get the higher grade. Now, to ensure automatic promotion, the old E grade was actually suspended for perfectly valid reasons, so that you are getting regular promotion coming through. The challenge, though, for clubs coming out of step five was they then had a massive amount of work to do to achieve the grade D, so effectively making a two-grade jump. What's happened for next year is that clubs coming out of step five will have a year to achieve the E grade and another year to achieve the D. But the lie to that is, despite the fact of having many clubs come into the league this year from step five, all of them have achieved their ground grading. Obviously, AFC Mansfield elected to return to step five. But it's absolute testament to the clubs and their will to get the work done that we've not found ourselves in a position of having to relegate anybody on purely ground grading basis this year.
Yeah, and the ground grading's often knocked again by certain fans, but it's there for a reason, isn't it? And it's there for those standards, and so that non-league can compete on a level playing field, and people can enjoy coming to games without fear of health and safety, and they know what they're getting, don't they? It gives us a product.
Yeah, very much so. And I think as well, there's two sides to that. At the end of the day, the simplistic view is to say, well, I'd rather just spend it on the centre forward. But we all know that's absolutely not right. And it isn't correct where in the past, perhaps some clubs have been able to gain an advantage on the playing field because that's where they focused all the resources and they haven't looked after the infrastructure and the facilities. The other side of it is if we actually look what's happening up higher in the game, at the bottom end of the EFL, clubs in the programme are waking up to the price advantage that we have in non-league football. EFL clubs started to be quite sensible with the pricing. which means that the non-league game's got to do that a little bit more to make itself extra attractive.
This is another step towards the perfect pyramid. We've talked about it for years, and it's now finally taking shape. And that, again, that's a lot of hard work by people behind the scenes, things that people, fans, certainly don't see. And it makes promotion and relegation an easier affair, you know, once everything's in place.
It does. I mean, to be honest, it has been something of a painfully slow process, and I think we're all keenly aware of that. It is frustrating for fans. It's frustrating for people who run football clubs to see where you're trying to get to, and it does take time. You can't simply bolt on extra multiple divisions. You've got to do it in a measured way. It's really important that, and again, I must thank the National League for their support in agreeing to get rid of the Super Playoffs, which none of us want. None of us wanted in the first place. It's a bit of a necessary step to go through to get to where we are now, and thankfully they've been fully supportive of that. But yeah, we are moving towards not a perfect pyramid, but a pure pyramid, where at least promotion and relegation is slightly more straightforward than it is at the moment.
And obviously in the interim, as you've already alluded to there, we have a weekend of calculators on points per game ratios and then the playoffs, super playoffs. It's not ideal, but nobody can deny there's been additional debate in the non-league game and more interest in the non-league game due to it.
Yes, I think so. I mean, it's extremely exciting. I can't recall a season where it's been quite so close, right the way down to the wire, certainly in the case of the Northern Premier, in two out of our three divisions. So I think it is really, really exciting. It's highly regrettable that there are going to be two teams that win a divisional playoff at step four that aren't going to go up. But everyone knew what the position was at the start of the season, and we move on from there. But yeah, it is very, very exciting. I think that it's all part and parcel of this wonderful game, isn't it? There are so many different permutations. Nothing gets taken for granted. And in so many respects, you look at the downsides of things, but the flip side of that is that from a pure thrill perspective, nothing better.
Yeah, the non-league game just keeps giving and giving. And moving forward with those extra 20 clubs, I mean, how's that going to impact on you as a league, as an entity? Does it bring additional administration? I mean, it obviously helps with brand awareness, but yeah, what are the benefits and the disadvantages of having a new league?
Well, one of the things that sort of we built our presentation around is that we actually have the resource and the infrastructure in place to deal with this now. Which is not to say that we in any way or shape or form took this really exciting win for granted. But within the league's administration, from a people perspective, we invest a lot of money in IT systems and making sure they're all joined up to automate as many things as we can. My team doesn't work 9 to 5. It's got a 24/7 attitude. You can get hold of somebody most times of the day or night on a telephone. Yes, there are going to be challenges, but with the year to deliver this, the planning is already rolling. We will, as I said previously, be working with our feeder leagues to ensure that the clubs that do come up to step five are ready so that there are no nasty shocks, because it is a bit of a brave new world. But equally, we all go into football to progress. It's very easy to avoid getting promoted. It's called cut the wage bill. Getting promoted and staying up is a whole different ballgame. But it's our job to prepare those new clubs coming, in the same way as it's our job to prepare our existing clubs for life at a higher level, if that's what they want.
And it all takes effect from the end of next season. So more interim changes, a few more tweaks going on for next season, give it all effect. But all this short-term disruption is for long-term gain, and it should be better for, as you say, clubs looking to progress up through the pyramid.
The reality is that the semi-pro game is changing all the time, and it's changed, I think, out of really any recognition over the last 15 to 20 years. All our clubs are struggling for volunteers. The sponsorship market is the toughest I can recall in decades. So it's a tough job running a non-league football club. The days of just relying on the first team are on. For football clubs to survive and be sustainable at our level, they have to engage with community programmes, they have to develop youth programmes, they have to develop academy programmes, they have to develop women's teams and all of those things that make your non-league football club part of the community. Now, if football is changing, we therefore have to make sure as leagues that we're providing adequate support for our clubs. We can't tell them how to run their businesses, but what we can do is bring them advice, expertise and knowledge to point them in the right direction.
Oh, and as if there's ever a quiet time to be a football league chairman, this is probably the busiest time of the year for you. Where does this weekend take you, Mark?
Well, it takes me personally to Farsley, who are not guaranteed to win the our Premier Division. We have other members of our team poised at other grounds, depending on the outcome of the fixtures on Saturday. Then, of course, we're into our divisional playoffs, and then we're into certainly at step three the Super playoffs. So, not quite sure where we're going to be next midweek or the week after that. And then it's a very short period of time where we get into the planning for next season. But it's fantastic. Who wants a closed season anyway?
Yeah, closed season. That's when you just change your clothes and go back out again, isn't it? That's Mark Harris, it's always great to have you on the show. Thank you for your insight and knowledge. And, well, good luck with all those final games and the playoffs. And we'll speak to you soon.
Pleasure to talk to you, Tim. Thanks for inviting me on.
So just time then to head on over to Non-League Paper Towns. And back with us this week, senior writer at the Non-League Paper, Matt Badcock. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Matt.
Good afternoon, Tim.
It's a lovely afternoon. Well, it is where I am anyway. We've spoken much in recent weeks, recent months about the top of the National League. And Alex Neri, I think, suggested last week by the end of Easter, we'd all now know what was happening, and short of a major catastrophe at the top of the National League, Leyton Orient should be able to secure the title at home this weekend.
Yeah, they should do. It's if there's shoulds in football, they're so close now. I went to Solihull Moors on a Monday to see the game there, and it was a really, really close game. It wasn't sort of a great game of football, but it was one of those that was really sort of, from a neutral's point of view, sort of fascinating to watch, and all the sort of tension that you'd expect at this time of the season. Obviously, with the Salford result coming through as well to the Leyton Orient fans, they were up dancing and singing, and you're sort of thinking, well, on the pitch, if you concede, it's going to change the picture again. But yeah, they got a really big point, and it sort of put them a point away. I mean, they're 3 points clear, obviously, of Salford, and there's a 5-goal swing, and you think it couldn't, surely that won't happen. You sort of fancy them to beat Braintree at home or on Saturday, but football is a strange game sometimes, isn't it? And anything could happen, but I sort of would be very surprised if we're not watching Leyton Orient lift the trophy on Saturday after a brilliant season. Really, they've been up there top of the league for a really long time, and they'll deserve it, that's for sure.
Yeah, and then with those playoff the playoff system in the National League, there's still a little bit of jiggery, pokery and all that needs to go on just to sort out who'll be playing who in the playoffs, and it really has kept the season alive.
Yeah, it's been a really sort of good tight race all around. I was on Good Friday, went to Salford Boreham Wood, and at one stage it looked like Salford were going to completely fall back. They were going to slip down to third, I think, at one point, and they got sort of a late goal winner at Boreham Wood to then take it on to Easter Monday. And obviously, then they've lost for the first time, I think, 10 or 11 games. So it has been sort of really, really exciting. Obviously, Solihull could still finish second, depending on how results go on Saturday. It'll be a remarkable achievement for them. Incredible season they've had under Tim Flowers. The fact that they can, and even they could still win it on the final day with an 8-goal swing is sort of, all testament to them. But yeah, there's a little bit of movement that can be happening. We obviously know the top seven in the National League, and it's going to be interesting sort of playing for position now.
Yeah, which can give a massive advantage. And you mentioned football's a funny old game. Looking at the National North, again, it's been one that we've spoken about time and time again this season, being so tight, competitive, the strength of some of the sides in there. And Easter, it's all about twists and turns. On the Saturday night, Chorley must have had certainly a confident glow about them, having beaten Stockport County 2-0. And then on Monday, they lose to promotion chasing Spennymoor Town and all but hand the title back to Stockport. I think Stockport now, 1 point clear, and they travel to bottom of the table in Nuneaton, and Chorley are at home, and they've got playoff chasing at Bradford Park Avenue. And having had the playoff nightmare last year, how much stuffing have Chorley got left in them?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you say on sort of at the weekend, you're thinking, well, Chorley, fair play to them. They've had this incredibly sort of tough run into the season where they've pretty much played everyone in the top. I think it's in the top 10 pretty much in their final sort of 10 games or so. And they went and got that massive result against Stockport, and you're thinking, well, this could be it, but you probably didn't want to be playing someone like Spennymoor after that, because they're a good side as well. And obviously it's put it back into Stockport's hand. I think they're taking about 3,500 down to Nuneaton, aren't they? So that would be incredible atmosphere. But, and if they do return, then it'd be fantastic to have them back at non-league's top table, so to speak. But for Chorley, it probably will be a case of regrouping. But those National League North playoffs are not going to be easy, whoever's in them come Saturday evening.
Yeah, and they're talking about the strength of the National North. We've seen confirmation this week as well of FC United being relegated. It's been a season-long slog there, but it's such a tough division. Do you think that the drop-down will give the club a little bit extra time to regroup and build again?
Yeah, I think sometimes relegation, when you first feel it, it's horrible, isn't it? And we will support teams that have been relegated, and you think, it does feel like the end of the world, but sometimes it can galvanise them a little bit, and you can sort of say, okay, let's come back from this, one step back, and to sort of go forward again. And it can maybe sort of galvanise everyone at the club and the fan base, and they can sort of maybe get back to enjoying football, because that's the one thing is about relegation scraps, is it just becomes, like I say, a long, hard slog, isn't it? And get to this stage of the season and you're sort of sick of the sight of a football pitch. But yeah, it's disappointing to see. They've been an incredible sort of rise, and they are an incredible story about what they've achieved in non-league since they formed. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one for the fans at the weekend, but I'm sure they'll fancy their club to come back stronger.
Yeah, and you mentioned about everything being about enjoying football. We've seen some high profile experienced managers departing from the game this week. The first one, Paul Doswell at Sutton United, it seems personal reasons behind that one. That's going to be a big loss for Sutton, both on and off the field.
Yeah, he's been there. He's the longest serving manager, wasn't he, in top five divisions and in there 11 years. And it's quite remarkable what the club and he's achieved in his time there. Went in the Ryman Premier, and I always remember interviewing him in their Ryman Premier days. He was just saying, we're not quite ready to go up to the Conference South yet, and eventually they got there and they obviously performed well and had the pitch, new 3G pitch coming down, and sort of really helped the club and the season ticket offers that they've had, that sort of really grown their fan base and their home support and everything that's come with it. And then that's the results on the pitch as well. Do the famous FA Cup run where they beat Cheltenham, Wimbledon, Leeds United to play Arsenal, and getting into the playoffs is just sort of they've had an incredible sort of period in the club's history. And Paul Doswell has been obviously a massive part of that and a driving force in that. And they will sort of feel his loss because of what the sort of character he is as well, and how what sort of a big mark he's left. But sort of listening to what he's been saying and how sort of the drive up from his South Coast home is sort of just become a bit too much for him, and he's sort of got to look after his own health and think about his family. And from the sounds of things, he'll still be involved in football, in the near future. And he's sort of in his blood, and you can't expect him to sort of stop now. But it would be another club will sort of be gaining a really experienced and progressive manager.
And talking about experienced managers, we've also seen Lee Bradbury at Havant Waterlooville departing after relegation, and Kidderminster Harriers Mark Yates having fallen short of the playoffs, leaving there. So there's still a big pool of experienced managers out there that'll be itching to get involved at a club over the summer and prove their worth again.
Yeah, I think it's always, you know, I've already had messages this week when Sutton, you know, when Doswell left Sutton, people sort of trying to get a bit of intel and information about it and get numbers for people and things like that. And, you know, there's lots of, as we often say, it's sort of a crazy job, but these guys seem to still want to do it because it gets sort of some sort of addictive bug that they have to go through all this stress and excitement. But I guess when you sort of see now all the clubs that are doing well and succeeding and having those moments of glory, I guess that's what they're all chasing, really.
Yeah, and then this weekend we've got the National League kicking off early, 12:15 kickoffs. But that's probably not enough time for you to take in two games in one day. So, where are you off to this week then, Matt?
Not quite enough time to get two games in. But no, I'll be at Leighton Orient to see what happens there. I hope I've still got my same evening deadline. Now, just because it's an early kickoff, I don't want the boss getting an idea that I've got to get my report in early or anything.
Get involved in those celebrations. You might be filing late.
Well, it's the thing. They're all well and good, these title wins, but you have to sit around for ages waiting for quotes, and it's sort of it's much better when they're half 12. These kickoffs. I remember a few years ago, it was half 5, and you're sort of waiting. I think it was Barnet. I'm sure it was a half 5 kickoff. And
it was a half 5.
Had to wait for every single team to be, every single player to be introduced back out onto the pitch. And you're thinking, oh, clock's ticking by, and it's sort of getting more and more. But that's journalist problems for you. But no, it's going to be. I think there's already a sellout down at Orient, so it's going to be an amazing atmosphere, and it will be great to sort of be there if they can do it. You know, I'm sure they will. But funny things can happen in football. But it will be good because, you know, quite an achievement, and you know, just see the size of the club and see the size of the clubs that have come down and how long it's taken them to get back out, and some that are still down here. So I think Justin has done an incredible job sort of when he came in sort of 18 months ago, and now they're on the brink.
Yeah, and talking of awards, there's other awards that obviously the non-league game will be celebrating, and fans can still get involved in voting in those.
Yeah, we're sort of getting down to the final sort of voting stage of our National Game Awards, or any National Game Awards field base. Sponsor the FA Vars and FA Trophy are supporting us this year as a sort of the headline sponsors. But yeah, lots of different awards for people to get involved with in time sort of running out now. So you need to get your nominations in. We've got Manager of the Year, Player of the Year, Young Player of the Year, Step 3-4 Player of the Year, Unsung Hero, Fan of the Year. There's a real sort of widespread of awards up for grabs, and they sort of really want to hear from people who love their non-league football and want who they think should be recognised and awarded. In May we have our awards. Have you got an invite to it? I think you.
I think I may be there. You know, maybe yeah. It's going to be one of those award ceremonies where I just turn up again just to network with people. You know,
we'll get you in. We'll get you in anyway. We'll squeeze you in somewhere. But no, it's always a great day. But it's made by the fact that our readers and people in non-league sort of have their say, and it's, you know, it's their awards as well. So it's always a really good day. But if you check out the paper, it's all the voting and nomination details are in there, and all the list of awards are in Sunday's paper, and also on our website.
That's the non-league paper this Sunday. As ever, Matt Badcock, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. And enjoy your day out, and hopefully to see a title lifted at the weekend.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you, as ever, to all of our guests, and a big thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season, share the show, and join in the debate throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Dave Anderson on Twitter at DaveAnderson78, and myself at Tim Fuel, FUELL. And of course, remember, you can find us every week on Audioboom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, Google Podcasts, Radio Public, Spotify, TuneIn Radio via your smart speakers, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Best of luck to all those involved in title, playoff, and relegation battles. And don't forget to send your pictures via Twitter at Non-League Show of all those fancy dress last days out. Thank you and goodbye.
Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA. JABBA.